What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens. My guest today is Conlon Rios, who is the founder of the programmable art platform, Async Art. Conlon and I first met each other inside the virtual world of CryptoVoxels. I knew right when I met him, he was going to make some big moves because of his intense passion for our space and the fact that he's always building interesting things. Async Art is not a pure art platform like how we think of them today, with images, GIFs, and the like. They have recently expanded into another medium of creation, music. Now users are able to have a direct impact over the composition of a song that they, and everyone else, are listening to. In this episode, we dive headfirst into Async Art and how it's a complete game changer, open versus closed ecosystems, and we even discuss the controversial topic of NFTs and emissions. Spoiler, NFTs are great for the environment. Conlon and the Async team took an extremely powerful idea and turned it into reality. These are the types of people building the future, and I'm excited to watch what Conlon and the Async team do next. Please enjoy my conversation with Conlon. Conlon, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you. And so, yeah, to get us started, normally I ask you about your background, but for those who don't know, you were actually my third podcast guest ever. And last time we spoke on the podcast was January, I think it was 9th of 2020. And so that was before you founded your company, Async Art. That was when we were just two people in the metaverse building stuff in CryptoVoxels and hanging out and having fun. We're still having fun, but back then it was just totally different world. So yeah, just tell me, like, what have you been up to since that time? It's a lot has changed, so I'd love to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Conlon, founder and CEO of Async Art. And so since we last talked, we've launched Async Art about a month after our conversation, I believe. And it's just been a whirlwind of, NFT explosions. And we launched Async Art, and it's, as some of you might know, it's a platform where artists can deconstruct their work into layers and tokenize individual layers of their digital paintings, and then imbue those layers with abilities so that collectors who own a layer can, affect the overall work.
That's awesome. Okay, so can you give me an example of what that mechanically looks like? Because I remember talking to you way back then, and I was having trouble. I was like, how does this work? Because it sounds so sci-fi. But then, this is a pretty bad analogy, but I was like, wait a second, is this like Harry Potter where the art is like alive and like changing and doing all sorts of cool stuff?
Yeah. So to take an example, like the genesis piece for the project is called First Supper, and it's a remix of Da Vinci's, Last Supper painting. And the idea is that it's a table where there's like 13 different characters who are all at the table seated. And every character is a layer that's actually like separated from the piece. When you look at the overall work, it looks like just like a single painting, but each layer can be individually owned. And each layer was contributed by a different artist. So at the time when, we launched, we collaborated with 13 of like the top selling crypto artists in the space at the time, and they all contributed a layer. And so now like each of these layers are, most of them belong to a different owner. A couple of the people own, duplicate characters, but for the most part, they're owned by different collectors. And then each artist imbued the layer with like a set of abilities, like, abilities like state change. So some of the characters have different poses or different costumes. Some of the characters can actually move within the piece between like the X and Y axis, or they can or they can mirror themselves and rotate. And the owners of these layers can then, they change the work through a transaction. And so like to your earlier point about this being Harry Potter art, it's like it's art that changes and it's different potentially every time you look at it. Like you might look away and a few minutes later look back and someone changed it, now the art's different. But the collectors are always changing it from within the original artist intent. So you're not adding to it with your own works. You're still like becoming part of the artwork still.
Yeah, I think this concept is so crazy and so cool, because it's in my opinion, it's like a step up in the evolution of what art is and what it can be. Because so first of all, I'm very, very bullish and very excited about the NFT art market as a whole. I think that NFTs are going to eat a large swath of the traditional art market, and I see it as a new kind of medium that artists can get creative and really kind of expand the boundaries of what art is and what it's capable of. But what you're doing is kind of like, it's like a total step up function like from that, because you're actually making the art, instead of just like a static image or a GIF or like a video or whatever, you're kind of imbuing it with these more more like customizable, I don't know, like alive pieces, which I think is incredibly cool. So what was like the original genesis of this idea? And were you kind of like, were you super passionate about the art market before? How did this all come to be?
Yeah. So, before this, you know, I was just a collector in the space. So we actually met through CryptoVoxels and I was, you know, just collecting art, talking to artists, running some virtual world art club meetups in the metaverse. So really just immersed in the space as a collector. But at some point, I wanted to make some crypto art of my own. And my background is in mobile and game development. So, you know, I was coming to it from like, oh, well, like, is there anything that can be added from the viewer, the player's perspective? Like, can they interact? Can art be more than like a one-way broadcast and like more like a two-way conversation? And so I initially started scoping out, you know, this idea of like some art piece I would do where, you know, people could own aspects of the piece. I could say like reach inside the painting and own part of it. But there was a moment where I realized like, wait a minute, like I'm talking with artists every week. Is there an opportunity here to build a platform for them to come in and them to make things with this? And so that's what, you know, the First Supper was essentially that at the time, almost all the artists who participated there, they were artists who I was already leasing virtual land to in CryptoVoxels. So I already had a really close relationship with every artist here. So it was a really natural way to just get started.
That's awesome. Okay. So what type of artist is attracted to Async? Because it's not just like, yeah, again, it's a little more in depth in the creation process. So what type of artist do you think is most attracted to these features and this product that you've built?
That's a great question. So it kind of manifests in the question of like, well, why would I want to make programmable art? Like this layered art where like people can now own layers and become part of the works. I think it speaks most to artists who really want to tell deep, compelling stories within their art, and artists who want to build worlds within the art. So like if you take the First Supper as an example, like it would work as a static piece. Like it would totally work as just like a nice piece that people contribute to you, and they pass the Photoshop file around and people add to it and they send it on. But now, like now that the fact that it's now programmable, and you know that like at any given time, one of these collectors may come into the piece and refresh it. You have like these stories emerging. And as an example, I'll give you one. So the ceiling layer is a layer by M. Lipti. And there's two different states, right? There's one with the weird mutant cat in the ceiling, and there's one where a finger comes in the ceiling. And the finger, if it's in that state, it can actually be moved and pointed at any point within the ceiling. And so during the auction, as these pieces are being auctioned, once that layer was sold to, I believe, Metacoven started actually pointing the finger at the next character who was going to be auctioned. So like, now you could look at the piece throughout the auction week and you could see which character was going to be auctioned next by like where the finger is pointing at. And that was something that was completely unexpected, that I don't think anyone anticipated that at all. I think just Metacom just took it with it and ran. Like I literally, no one prompted it at all. And it's now like, it's part of the piece's history because every change there is actually in the chain. And it was just a case of like the piece, the room was coming alive in a way that no one anticipated or had actually built into the piece.
That's so cool. I feel like, first of all, I feel like Metacoven's like always thinking 10 years in the future. So that's awesome. But, but yeah, just the ability to, because for me at least, and I could be wrong, but I think a big part of art is about the story, the story about the piece, story about the artist, and like, you know, it kind of builds upon itself. And so to be able to have this story that you just explained about the art instantly for me makes it more appealing and just cooler in general. Yeah. So I think that's a really cool effect that it has. And also, I think Matt Cain, who's one of my favorite artists in the space, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong. I think he made a piece of art through Async called like Bitcoin volatility art. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. So from my understanding about this piece, like it tracks the price of Bitcoin, or no, sorry, it tracks the volatility of Bitcoin and like gets different shades of colors as the volatility increases. Or could you explain that piece to me?
Yeah. So the idea is, you know, this is now like, you now have an interface to update your artwork, like through these layers, right? And so, you know, the first step is, oh, well, a human can control the layers and change them at will. But what you can do with taking a step further is you can say, oh, a human doesn't have to control these layers. A computer can run a wallet and push transactions based off of real world data. So in the case of Matt Cain's piece about Bitcoin, there's a layer called a control layer, which controls every aspect of the painting. And so you have a server that's running, monitoring the price of Bitcoin and changing the work based on the volatility. So basically, if Bitcoin in the last 24 hours is more volatile, you know, make the colors more drastic, or make like the scale and rotation of the layers more like, you know, expanded outwards and crashing. Whereas if the volatility has been, you know, more stable, the piece starts to stabilize a bit. So that's a case of like you have a computer owning a layer, and changing it based off of data.
That's so crazy. That's I really think that's going to be. I feel like what we're seeing now is really cool and really innovative, but I feel like it's like scratching the surface of what this is capable of going forward. And I think I've seen you somewhere talk about someone, or maybe it was just an idea, someone maybe making like a game out of their artwork. Is that right?
Yeah, we had a couple pieces like that. One was called Cosmic Chess by George Boya. And it's a completely playable chessboard. So there's two layers, and the layers control all the pieces for either the red or the white chess pieces. And so as a way to promote it during the auction, he gave me the layer to use during the auction, and I was playing against Mihawk Jane, who's an amateur chess player, and we were just playing a game through the board. And it's a completely playable chess set. It's a digital chess set and playable through art.
Yeah, that is just so cool and different and new that I love it. All right, so I mean this is kind of obvious, but I just want to ask you, how do you think that async art stands out comparative to the other NFT art marketplaces and platforms out there?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest aspect is really the programmability. It forces artists to think a little bit differently about their work, both in how they're going to create it and how it's going to be collected, and not in the process of making it, because digital artists are already working with layers. So if you look at Photoshop or Procreate, like it forces you to break down your work into layers. So they're already doing that. But conceptually, they're not used to, deciding, oh, this layer is actually going to be owned by someone and they can change these abilities on it. So that's really the biggest differentiator. But I'd say it should appeal to anyone who wants to try to push the medium of art, digital art, because like up until now, digital art has mostly been recreating the physical. It's been, you watercolor in real life. Okay, well, you use a watercolor tool in Photoshop to do watercolor. Or you oil paint in real life. Okay, you oil paint in Photoshop. But like, you're still recreating the exact same things that have been done for hundreds of years. And so what we're trying to do is like, okay, let's reimagine art as if you had the digital tools, connectivity, dynamic, all these ways to plug in from the get-go.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's say I'm an artist and I want to create a programmable piece of art through Async. What is the process? And like, how does that look like? Take me from like step one to step 10 or whenever you're complete.
Sure. So the first step is just apply. So, go to Async Art and apply as an artist. We are trying, our ultimate goal for this is to provide it to as many artists as possible. So when we vet primarily on just legitimacy. We want to make sure that the artist is who they are, that the art that they put in the portfolio is in fact the art that they did, and that they're who they represent themselves to be. But long term, we don't intend to be a curator on what's good or what's not. It's really just about get the tool in as many people's hands as possible. And as we've seen, some of the best selling artists on Async have been artists who weren't actually accepted on some of the other platforms before, because this is a new medium. The best ideas are going to come from out of left field. They're going to come from like places we didn't expect. And that's why I want to get as many people as possible. So yeah, just apply is the first step.
Awesome. Okay. So, and then when I'm onboarded, how is it an easy process to kind of make the different layers that are programmable or what does that look like?
Yeah. So we have a tool called Async Canvas. And Canvas, it's kind of like just a installation wizard. So it walks you through like, okay, create your first layer. Okay. Upload the states that you want or set the ability you want. All right, now you want to create a second layer and so forth. And you can basically just do that until you're done. And then you can actually test it in the Canvas tool and be like, okay, well, like, toggle through different states and see what it could look like in different combinations. And then when you're done, you just click submit. And when it's approved, you can mint it.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so I know that, the main focus is art, but also I do understand that you are also entering a different art, which is the art of audio or music or whatever you want to call it. So tell me about kind of your entryway into the music scene.
Sure. Yeah, so when we first launched, we did envision like, okay, this can be applied to multiple types of media, but you know, we're going to do art first. And so near the end of last year, we started working on music, and async music is the exact same thing we just described for audio, for visual, but for audio. So if you listen to a song, you know, songs are naturally already broken up into layers. They're called like layer stems, and like a stem would be like the background beat or the synth or the piano or the lyrics, the vocals. And so musicians already think again, like about their works in the form of stems. And so, yeah, so Async Music launched in April, and it's the exact same offering as visual, but for audio. And in some ways, it's almost an easier get, because when you look at a painting, to say like, oh, you can control this, you kind of have to ask like, well, what can I control? And you got to like spell it out like, oh, we can control this tree or that car in the background or that character. But music, it's already like, hey, you can own the lyrics to the song. And if you own the lyrics, you can change between different versions that the artist provided you with. Maybe there's an a cappella version. Maybe there's like an electronic version. Maybe there's a guest artist. It's like different states or like different guest, you know, people singing it. Or maybe if it's a duet, maybe one state is the male version, one state's the female version, and one state is them singing together. So you can experience a song in multiple ways.
That's really wild. Okay. So to give another basic example for myself, it would be like, okay, Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA. And instead of Miley Cyrus singing Party in the USA, you could get like, I don't know, like let's go with Lil Wayne or who knows, some male. And so you could have him doing the track instead of Miley Cyrus. Is that kind of the correct way to think about it? Or is that like...
Yeah, but it would have to be a collaboration that they agreed to. So when Miley Cyrus mints Party in the USA, she would, and she agreed with Lil Wayne to like collaborate. Lil Wayne would sing a version of it. And then in the layer, the layer stem for the lyrics, there'd be two states, Miley Cyrus singing it or Lil Wayne. And whoever owns that lyric stem would be able to change it for everyone else to hear. They would be the decider of that.
Very cool. Okay, awesome. Okay, so that's for lyrics. And you can also do the same with like, you could have Miley Cyrus with like guitar, and you have like Lil Wayne with like drums. Is that also like layers that you can program?
Exactly, yeah. So the musician can decide what layers they want to offer as a token and what are just baked into the song naturally. And then with the layers, they can provide different states. And they may choose like, you know, either different people doing it, or maybe there are different drafts. Like sometimes musicians are like, hey, there's like three different versions we went through before we got to the final version. You can experience a song in, you know, in hear different versions of it. It's really up to them what they want to provide.
That's super interesting. Okay, so what are some kind of similar question to the who was attracted to this from the art side? Who, what type of musician and creator is attracted to this from the music side? Is it like, is it mostly like, yeah, like is like DJs, or is it like, you know, traditional rock bands? Like, I'd love to hear kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, so it comes back to stories. Like, if you really want to tell a richer story through your song than just the song itself, this is a way to do it. So as an example, on the launch wave, one of the groups, HMLTD, it's a pop band from the UK, their song is called Leaving, and it's a song about like a love triangle between like these three different people. And the song has like 6,400 possible combinations, and the whole point is the song is meant to be the relationship itself. So as the song changes, it's like the relationship is changing. And, you know, the song is never really finished because it's always going back to like different, you know, different versions of the lyrics, or sometimes the woman singing, or sometimes the man singing. And sometimes the lyrics, you know, slightly differ. And it's constantly changing because like the relationship is constantly changing. You can basically put a collector in the role of a part of the song. So now part of the song is actually now like an actual human person in that role, if it makes sense. Like the lyrics are now like a living person controlling them.
That's so cool. Okay. So yeah. So let's say I had some layers, you had some layers. And then during this song, so obviously like, if I play the song, and it's in state one, let's say, and let's say there's a female singer, and then, so I play it, and then you own the other layers for a male singer, and that's state two. So I play it once, it's state one, then you play it, after you've changed the state to state two. So will I hear the male voice?
Yeah, so when you change a layer, everyone has to listen to that. So you're like the curator that role. And then I can add one more part to this. Because a song has the capability to always change, we introduce the concept of a blank record token. And these are fungible tokens that you can purchase outside of the main layer stems. And these can be burned at any time to record the current snapshot of a song. So if you're like listening to the song and you really like, you know, the layer two state that I had in place, and you want to make sure you can always hear it, you can burn the recording to record the current state. So even if I change it, you at least will be able to record listen to the version that you recorded.
That is so cool. It reminds me of like burning CDs back in the day where, you know, you get like your favorite songs from like LimeWire or whatever. And then you burn your CD and you have that kind of your own customized mix that you've curated yourself. So that's a really cool concept. So how has the art and the which sector within these two categories, the art and the music, do you find that people are most engaged with?
So I'd say the music side. Music has been it's still kind of like what we call a kind of closed invite only right now. The art side, of course, people can apply to and just mint as they want. But music, you know, because it's kind of complicated, we want to make sure that like every wave of art musicians that we release with really showcase the platform well, and we can really kind of control the message around it. At some point, it'll be completely opened up to all musicians. But the engagement around there is higher because the records themselves, they encourage you to like, one, they allow for a wider group to participate in our music release. So if a song has like five layer stems, before the record model, okay, only a few big collectors could really buy those layer stems and enjoy them. But now there's these recording tokens and they can be made available at a lower price point. So now you have like more people engaging in the song by buying the records and then recording what they choose to record. When they choose to record it is their way of like saying, hey, I think the current state of the song is interesting and I want to snapshot it. And so that's kind of the activity that we see going on regularly, people recording tracks.
That's so cool. Okay, so when I do a layer change, that is a regular on-chain transaction. Does that cost like, you know, $3-4 or how expensive is that? And can it get up to like $50 depending on how complicated and how many layers are changing?
On average, it costs a few bucks to do a transaction. That's kind of your average fee. On a bad day, if Ethereum gets really bad, then yeah, it can get upwards of, you know, $10 or $20 to change a layer. So you got to be really intentful with your changes. Gas fees are always something that we're monitoring.
Very cool. Okay, so how do you think about kind of the platform as a whole in terms of not just these products that you offer, but like gamification of Async Art, the platform? So do you think of like, because I know you guys added in a leaderboard feature. I consider that like a kind of a gamification feature because, you know, people are naturally competitive and they want to kind of show off and stuff and like be number one. So what were your thoughts around the, I guess, quote unquote, gamification of the platform?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think when you look at gamification, when a platform introduces it, it's you can see that the sort of activity that they want to reward and that they want to encourage. And so by putting a leaderboard up, it was really about us like trying to reward people who are engaging with their content, but also to also highlight it. So like there's, you know, when people come to the site normally, there's people changing layers and making recordings, but this wasn't being surfaced. So you might come to the site and be like, hey, there, you know, I don't see new art since I last came in. It's like, but what you don't realize is in that few hours that you're gone, these art pieces have actually changed. And so how do we make sure that like that activity gets surfaced? Because that wasn't apparent to people before we had our leaderboard and our activity feed. So that was our thinking. We really wanted to like highlight the activity going on behind the scenes that you may not see at first glance.
Okay, wait, so the leaderboard is for state changes or layer changes?
Yeah, so we have currently just six leaderboards. You know, we have things like the top collection, you know, people who collect the most art, but then we also have the most active users. So people who are actually updating the works and engaging with the content. And then we also have recording. So who is recording the most artwork, music?
Oh, very cool. Okay. So, So for the layer changes, is this the behavior that you want to encourage the most from the users?
Yeah. I mean, ideally people are using the artwork that they get, and like, I'm not saying like every day, but like, you know, like ideally you buy a layer, you should change it and play with it and, you know, and see what it is, see what it can do. And then, but that's kind of a two-way conversation, because the artist also needs to think about, well, like, what's going to be interesting to interact with in my piece. And so it's kind of like, we want to encourage from both sides, collectors to engage with their works, but artists also need to come up with cool ways to engage with it.
Awesome. Okay. So the reason that you want to kind of optimize for these layer changes and for this engagement is that just to dry, is that kind of to showcase the power of async art, or is that kind of to show the, just to get the users more engaged in the platform itself?
It's really kind of both. Well, it's mostly to showcase the power of it. Like, you know, sometimes people come to Async and they think like, oh, well, like, it's, you know, like, is this just a novelty? Is this just a gimmick? And it's like, in some pieces, layer changes can be really powerful, and, you know, it can change the entire intent of the piece sometimes. And it's like, we want to encourage artists to start thinking about the possibilities of what's possible here, and not, you know, and kind of give it a chance to sink their teeth into it. And really think about it, because like I said, it is a new way to think about making art, and artists aren't used to it. They're used to like, hey, what's my story that I want? What's my broadcast that I just want to put out there, and then I'm done. And it's like, art can be two way. It can be a conversation back from the people engaging with it, and then, you know, you're communicating back. And so yeah, it's just highlighting the activity to get them to think about it.
Awesome. Okay, so how do you think about the I'm just like, this is a made up word, but the socialification of NFT platforms, like, you know, people can like, they can follow, they have like an activity feed. Is this an overall good thing or bad thing?
I guess it's kind of mixed. There's some activities that you just want to naturally do on a platform. Like, if I like an artist, I want to be able to follow that artist and get notified when the artist creates content. Right. Or if there's a collector that I like their collection, I probably want to follow that and get notified, hey, when they buy a new artwork or bid on new artwork, it's probably going to be something interesting that I like. So those actions make sense. Like, you just naturally want to have them. But if you take this to the nth degree of, like, you know, Web 2.0, the social networks of that world, they're designed to keep you on those platforms as much as possible. Like, Facebook is trying to have your attention 24/7. Right. And the danger of this with Web 3 is that if a platform succeeds in that, people start to no longer care or know why they're buying these NFTs. Like, if you take it to the nth degree, if Facebook had NFTs, right, and Facebook got you to spend 100% of your time on Facebook buying these NFTs, well, then why even use the blockchain for that point? You're just basically buying, you know, database entries on their own central platform. It's tough. Social gamification, social features should be, it's a double-edged sword. You know, we should all be aware of, like, hey, why are we doing this? Why are we using NFTs? And always encourage the composability and between these assets on other platforms and so forth.
That's a super, super interesting idea. Because it's almost two diametrically opposed, not processes, but thoughts, where we all love NFTs. We want to encourage the use and encourage the spread of NFTs. But at the same time, if a platform becomes too good, like, let's just pretend OpenSea, like, it's just like the next Facebook and everyone's obsessed with it. And then eventually, if no one's leaving OpenSea, then you wouldn't even want to, like, NFTs would be pointless. Cause as you point out, you could just like have an OpenSea database and put all your quote unquote NFTs on there. That's really interesting. So, but don't you think that we'll eventually head down the pathway of NFT platforms being the next Facebooks and the next Googles and the next, like, maybe not Google because that's more information, but, you know, the next things that we use on a daily basis and use all the time?
So I do, but they're going to be reimagined. They're going to have to be, because, like, for example, you know, if I was the way Facebook should, let's say you had like emojis on a social media platform, right? Those emojis would be like enabled by the NFTs you hold in your wallet. So, like, already you want to have that network encourage people to go to the other platforms and like collect these NFTs so they can use them in that on that the social media platform. So like you kind of want to like work together to like promote different dApps so that people you have like the synergy between all of them. If that kind of makes sense, like that, like the social networks will have to be reimagined.
Totally.
And if I can say one thing, like it's more like it's similar to like onboarding, right? So like if you force people to have a MetaMask, right? There's like you can obfuscate. Sorry, you can hide more of the Web3, but if you take it to the nth degree and hide it completely, then people aren't going to understand why they're acquiring these NFTs. And then it goes back to, well, then just have your own central site that people buy a database entry. So it's like you do want to expose some of the blockchain stuff like MetaMask and transactions and Etherscan and get people to start thinking about this, because if you hide it too much, then they're not going to understand, well, why do I pay gas fees? You know, why should I pay gas fees? And then you have to tell them why, you know what I mean? Like it's, you got to let them learn a bit of the system.
Totally.
Otherwise don't even use the system. Otherwise you're making things harder for yourself. Like don't use blockchain. Right. You're not going to take advantage of it.
Yeah. And then also I guess a forcing function of the current business models on the internet, where most of it is ad driven, and yeah, the best way to, you know, kind of get, you know, earn more money from ads is having people stay longer on your platform. Yeah. And that's why I think if we have like a metaverse native or a Web3 native Facebook, whatever that looks like, hopefully they're not going to monetize in that way. So they actually don't mind if you come on the platform for a minute and then you're onto some other platform. Hopefully they can still we can kind of figure out a business model that makes sense for them, that doesn't cause these ill effects that these traditional tech giants,
yeah,
today, yeah, that they're structured.
I'd say it's similar in the gaming world with NFT assets, right? Like I think we might have touched this in some of our conversation, how like, you know, we keep waiting for a big game company to like turn all their assets over into NFTs, but they still have that old world thinking of like, no, I want to keep all my game players in my walled garden and only buy my assets. And they won't do NFTs because like, well, then people can use the NFTs in other platforms, other games. But it's like, if you embrace that model completely and say, no, our assets are going to be on a public blockchain, then it's like it actually makes your garden bigger, because as more platforms start to build on top of your NFTs and use it, now those assets get more valuable because now they can now be used elsewhere and you have other people building your ecosystem. So it's kind of like you got to really commit. But if you commit to it, it's going to actually make your garden bigger.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of like it's going to be really hard for a lot of kind of traditional players to accept that approach, because it's so opposed to,
yeah,
to what's the current state of things. But that's also why I'm so bullish and excited on founders that are like quote unquote metaverse native, that, yeah, are like from the space, for the space, with the ethos of it. And I do understand that there is a lot of limiting factors to like blockchain in general. So I understand, yeah, that like a lot of times you have to make a Web2-esque product, and then, yeah, over time you turn it more Web3. But yeah, even that is like very important, because people say, "Hey, I'm having the mindset that this Web2 thing that I've built, whatever it might be, it will eventually become Web3 native over, you know, over time." Which that just that mindset alone is going to have a huge impact down the road, comparative to, you know, as you mentioned, like the big gaming companies say, they're like, "Why would I ever do NFTs? I'm not going to give up all my power," and you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Awesome.
But if only they did. Yeah, so otherwise we got to always keep in mind the Web3, you know, the ethos. Otherwise it'll end up being Web2 again.
Totally. I think that you are correct that we are on a people are will do what the incentives are, right? So if, yeah, if you can make more money by being Web2, then people unfortunately will probably go that route and stay that route. But if we can develop, you know, the incentives for people to thrive and grow with Web3, then hopefully they'll you know go that route and build there. So I think we're on the right path for sure. So that's, yeah, great. So okay, so speaking of like the evolution and growth of all this, how do you see AsyncArt evolving over time?
Yeah, that's good. So we really want to be like the definitive creator platform for making programmable art and telling like deep stories through NFTs. So that's really where we want to see ourselves long term. I think that like You can, as an example, you can embed async art masters on any web page on the internet, and it's a couple people use this right now, but like we'd really like to see that become more prevalent, where people just they come to async, they make something, and then they embed it on their blog or their community or their banner or their homepage, and so they start using the tool for this, and so that's where we'd like to be going more in the long term. But also as a creator platform where people could start, ideally sell their works even on other platforms. Like today we do, people do have to sell their first sale on the platform so async gets a commission. But long term, we'd like to have it so that you could, maybe pay a minting fee one time and then go sell your artwork anywhere you want. And so in that world, you'd have people making async artworks, but then they sell it on, Maker's Place or, Super Rare, or Known Origin. Like you go out and sell it on those platforms. You can basically sell it on whatever platform you want. You have your community at. Maybe you're on Patreon and you have a monthly Patreon reward. Okay, you make an async artwork and you give layers out to like your Patreon fans of a certain tier.
That's so cool. So providing the infrastructure for the next generation of media, essentially. Is that kind of an accurate way to describe it? Awesome. That is such a cool vision. All right, so I want to switch gears here a little bit and talk about actually being a founder, because that's something that I haven't really touched upon in the past, and I'm really trying to dive in more deeply into that now, because I feel like it is very important to discuss what the trials and tribulations of being a founder are, because it's just important for people to know. So I'd love to hear from you. What are some of the best things about being a founder? And also, what are some of the worst or hardest things about being a founder?
Sure. I think I could start with the worst things first, because that one's definitely on my mind. I think the worst thing is not having enough time to do the side projects that I want to do. When we started Async, I was still running the Gangnam Neon Zone art clubs once a month, right? And those I was just doing just for fun. And it was platform agnostic, bring on artwork from any platform. It's really about artists first. Anyone could submit artwork and we would discuss it in the metaverse world. And I was loving that. And honestly, I just didn't have the time to maintain it because it required like time to like, prepare, collect the artworks, promote it. And I just couldn't upkeep it. So that was something I had to let go. But in the space in general, like there's so many projects I'd be doing right now for free just to build the space up if I could. Async Art has an Apple TV app to display all the Async artworks. I would love to build one that's just for all NFTs. That just like OpenSea NFT viewer. Why doesn't someone build that? Someone just please build that right now. Like it isn't hard. It takes like a month and you could be done. Some of the DIY photo frames for NFTs. I'd love to be building those. Leasing NFTs and renting them. I'd still love to build some contract for that. Like I could just sit down and write out like 20 ideas I'd love to build and or see someone else build. So as a founder, I'd say the biggest downside now is just not being able to build up the side projects that I want.
I love that. It really shows that you're hyper passionate about the space and always trying to figure out what can I do to improve people's experiences and really the usability of this entire ecosystem. All right, so
And one more idea. Crypto voxels, right? You can have like a browser be like r remote piloted. So like you could have like an AI crypto voxel character running around and doing stuff, like an AI character. And like I wanted to build that, so like he'd be running around and flying around and like talking to people with like a chatbot in CryptoVoxels. And like someone should just build that. Just it would be cool. You know what I mean? Like anyway.
That is actually that is so cool, and also that goes kind of that connects to a thought that I have that I think most beings and most entities like in the metaverse will actually be AIs and not be people, and I think that they'll be AIs that actually like they quote unquote contribute to whatever like whatever they'll go in CryptoVoxels, they'll build stuff, they'll host events, they'll actually like function, and this is like in a few years when that's more advanced, but does that line up with your thinking, or do you think that that's kind
Oh,
of not necessary?
absolutely. Like the art club meetups, you could build like a bot to, like to just referee these art club meetups and like prompt people with questions and like record the conversations and then you could have an art club meetup run by an AI over time. Yeah, like totally. And also everyone has a presence in the metaverse, so like a CryptoVoxels HQ. You want to have like a receptionist there to like answer questions, right? Like we have an async headquarters. There's no one there to answer questions about the platform.
That's
I'd
very
love to have
cool.
like a docent wandering the halls of our museum answering questions. And like that would be so like someone should build that as a service. Like, hey, we'll build you like CryptoVoxel characters that like you can just populate. Anyway, Yeah, I think so. I agree with that. Like, definitely most of the people in the metaverse will be AIs. And also they have the ability to transact. So like you could tip them, they could pay you, they could buy art because again, like they have a way now to like transact economically with their wallets. So
Whoever's listening to this podcast has just got $10 billion ideas. So they're going to be anyone who executes on that is going to be very, very happy. Awesome. Okay,
Yeah, so going back to the what's the good things? I'd say the good thing is being able to meet people. It's easier to meet people when you have like an entity, a community around you, because people naturally introduce you to like new people to talk to. People come to you for like, hey, like what are your thoughts on this? So that's probably the biggest benefit, that you meet a lot of people, if you found a project.
Awesome. Okay. Both amazing answers. All right. So this is one thing that everyone I feel like is talking about on Twitter that has a NFT startup and also crypto startup. I'm really focused on NFTs. So everyone's always saying like, hey, we're hiring. How do you find good people to hire and work with? I feel like it's impossible, but I'd love to hear from you. Like, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this was the first time, I started this company. I've learned a lot in the 15 months since we launched, and I'd say the two things that I would already give to people, like if anyone asked me, like, hey, should I start my own company? I'd say one, get really good at talking to people and get social, because like I'm an introvert, and like that's definitely held me back. Like you gotta be willing to talk to people. And two, only start the company if you already have at least a small network of people that you can hire from. Because I initially thought, oh, hiring is going to be one of the easier parts. The hardest part of this is going to be the tech. And in reality, the tech is actually the easiest part because it's predictable and you know how to do it. The hard part is the people, finding people who want to work on this, convincing them to work on it, and then convincing them, hey, like, don't give up, give up that cushy job at, Facebook and come work on this scrappy opportunity. Like, they might have like a family or they might have, a mortgage or something. And it's like, you just can't do it. And so I'd say, yeah, the best is if you already have a network beforehand. And so, I mean, just from my experience, like, the fact that I was already immersed in the NFT space for like a year before starting Async, that really helped me get a leg up. So, I mean, if you're brand new to the NFT space, it might be tempting to try and jump in, but like, it might behoove you to spend some time just getting familiar with the community, meeting as many people as you can, and then launching it. We got connected up early on, and that was like months before like any of this ever happened. So like, just meet people in the community and get involved with events. Maybe it sounds cliche, but I'd say that's the number one thing before starting a company in the space.
Yeah, no, I honestly think that that's great advice. It's just really about immersing yourself into the space, immersing yourself into the community, getting to know people, getting to know what's going on just in general. I think it's hugely helpful. All right, so is there any news, thoughts, ideas, or anything that you want to share, whether it be about async or anything?
Sure. So I just a couple of things that have happened this week. So we did announce a partnership with Mural. So Mural is the physical digital art displays, industry leading the screens. Like they're really beautiful screens. They don't even look like LCDs or something. They look like almost like paper. And so yeah. So now select async artworks are visible in the Mural gallery. So if you have the Mural, you can just go to the browse section of your app and just display the live version of the artworks, and they will change if people change them, or if they change based on the time of day. They'll change there. So that's really been a really big partnership, especially since when we launched, we actually built our own kind of like DIY frames out of like old refurbished monitors. And so, again, we were thinking like, okay, someday like there's gonna be frames in your walls that are just have art changing with, from time and people. And so it's been a great sort of way to close the loop with Mural. So that happened this week. And actually, there's actually a contest to win a free Mural if you retweet. So if you don't have one, you can win it. I'd say that's the big news for the platform. And then yeah, happy to just talk about other stuff if or yeah, whatever you like.
Yeah, no. So outside of async art and just I guess crypto art in general, what have been some things that have been catching your attention?
I'd say one of the big ones is that just a side thing, but like NFTs. I remember like maybe like last year, the community would, a recurring question in the community would be like, hey, should we rebrand NFTs? Should we name them differently, or like, should we standardize a phrase?
I
Because
remember
people are thinking,
that.
right? Remember the Twitter polls and stuff? And like, because everyone thought NFTs, oh, no one's going to say that in real life. And like, and it's just, I just found it very interesting, like how quickly that phrase now is a thing. Like random people I'm talking to, not even about NFTs, when it comes up, they just say, oh, NFTs, like, yeah, like, and it's like, wow, like they, and I as I think about it, like it makes sense because, you know, NFTs, it is a new thing for people. So they needed a new word. Any other word that already existed would not have fit for them. But NFTs, like, ah, it's this weird new thing. So I'd say that has been interesting. I'd say the climate angle was also something I didn't really expect from the creators. You know, NFTs, they run on blockchains and blockchains consume energy. But it was kind of surprising to see some creators have such a violent reaction to that. Because when you know, we thought like, oh, NFTs are going to be the salvation for creators, right? Because creators, digital creators, can now monetize their works in ways they couldn't do before, and this is good for them. So I'd say that's something I didn't quite expect to happen. But I would say this, like I always say, like, Ethereum is battle tested, and it is yet another way that Ethereum is being battle tested now, right? So when you know people like to say jumping to new chains really, you know, really easily, like, oh, just use another chain. And like I think there are definitely purposes for new chains, but it should not be ignored that Ethereum has been attacked from pretty much every angle you can imagine now. You know, from the chain level, you know, network attacks, from the community level, you know, people have attacked people in the community, and now even from a perception about climate, Ethereum is being attacked from that angle. So like, while I think other chains have purposes, if I was a mint, fine, durable art that you want to last as long as possible, Ethereum is still your number one bet because it hasn't, you know, it's been attacked from every possible angle and it's still up there running. So that's something I thought was interesting and was surprising on the climate side.
Yeah, no, okay. I love those both. Okay, so I remember the whole NFT kind of conversation, whether or not we should call them NFTs and whether names mm-hmm. are there. I was actually in the camp of not calling them NFTs. I thought that was a bad name and that we should choose something different that was more, that kind of explained it better. And so like I remember even in my old material for my firm, I call them UDAs or unique digital assets. So I was like, okay. And I was like, yeah, UDAs, you know, we're blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was a much better term. And I was like, yeah, eventually like people will just start calling them that. And that's just not at all. Like no one cared at all. And like NFTs just stuck. And also it's like JPEG. I have no idea what JPEG stands for, but I know like a JPEG means like photo.
Right. Right?
So exactly. It's kind of a similar thought process there. And then on the climate side, I thought that I was shocked, and really what it came down to in my mind, why there was such a like visceral reaction to negative reaction towards people suddenly like making NFTs and saying, oh my gosh, you're damaging the climate by creating NFTs because of CO2, you know, greenhouse gases from these mining machines, from the proof of work or whatever. I basically was like, this is insane because first of all, I think people were mad that other artists, like new artists especially, were making more money than them. So there's a lot of jealousy there, but also I think that people were just very misinformed. So on the surface, yeah, of course, like if you think, you know, you Google how much energy does Bitcoin or like Ethereum consume, it's like a lot, right? It's a big number. But also they're not thinking about, okay, if you are an artist and you want to make a painting, you have to get the canvas, which is made of wood, which comes from a tree. The canvas is made of cotton, which comes from, you know, a plant, like the cotton plant. And then the paint is like oil paints, which oil is not great, right? And so like, if there's one artist on Ethereum, I'd say, yeah, maybe it's not too good for the environment. But Ethereum is like infinitely scalable. So we could have a billion artists all making amazing work. And that would mean a billion canvases that are not created and all those greenhouse gases are you know, not created, right? So in my mind, it was just like, how can the best thing to do for the climate is to go full digital, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I went through the exact same process with a few people. I'm like, yeah, all the materials you outlined, half of those aren't even made in the country that you made it, that you're using.
Totally.
They're made in other countries with horrible conditions for people working there. They're shipped to likely China, made in a factory, then shipped back to your own country where it sits in a warehouse, then shipped in a truck to the place where you buy it from. And then you got to move it to your gallery and showcase it. You know, it's just it's a long line of carbon emissions, but it can't be measured. There's no easy way to say, oh, click this and let me see the whole carbon damage footprint. And again, not to like put that down, like, you know, we all should be, the climate is, you know, we only have one, we absolutely have to save it. But like, yeah, it's the wrong thing to attack when we're not even, it's like all of a sudden, suddenly people got a conscience about like, oh, our climate is being affected, but they had no issues up until now, you know, doing all the old world stuff. So
yeah, 100%. And also you hit upon like measurability, like people, can easily Google like how much energy does Bitcoin or Ethereum use, but yeah, you can't easily Google like how much energy does my canvas, like, you know, did the canvas that I just bought from Target, like you know, how much that costs. So yeah, I think there's multiple factors in there. I don't really see that argument as much anymore. I get it from their standpoint, but I really think it comes down to mainly jealousy. And I'm a staunch supporter of that. If we go all digital, that's the best thing for the environment, hands down.
Absolutely. If people begin wanting digital goods, like as opposed to physical, honestly, most of the stuff we buy ever in today, it's disposable. The t-shirts we buy, the posters we buy, the things we buy, it's designed to be consumable and disposable so that you want more of it, right? And so not only are we doing all this physical consumption, we're doing physical consumption of goods that are meant to degrade over time anyway and then be replaced. So that's unsustainable, right? This idea that, you know, millions of people are going to be shipping things around the world for this. It's like, that's not how we should be monetizing artistic value.
100%. Yeah. Preaching to the choir. 100%.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, this has been amazing, but let's jump into the closing questions now.
Yeah.
All right. What is your single favorite NFT that you own?
I'd want to say, I should say an Async artwork. I have a few pieces. My favorite Async artwork that I have is, I like the Phase Space. Okay, so T.S. Moreau is doing these programmable comics. So I own Phase Space number 2. It's a programmable comic where like the characters, you can actually change like their speech bubbles, what they're saying, their costumes, their accessories. I think it's a great way for comic artists to monetize their work now, because like you can basically have people like play a role in your comic without changing the overall crazy arc. Anyway, C.S. Moreau did it. I own the page number 2 of his comic. I love it. I own like the dancing monkey in the corner of the market, and it's just really funny. You can make him dance and stuff and change outfits. But that's Async art. If I have to say NFT in general, it's still the Rose Nexus, which is the CryptoVoxa parcel that A Lot of Money did built way back when. And even though I don't go there like, you know, weekly or monthly anymore, but like, you know, it's still built there. It's basically the NFT that like, I think it's what pushed me over the edge of like just being a complete metaverse fan. And like, I still think it's still like the coolest NFT museum gallery in the metaverse. I think it's very iconic, and I don't think I would ever sell it. It's one of those NFTs where I would never sell it because of the value it has like to me.
That is so cool. Yeah, even the name Rose Nexus, like that is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. What is your most controversial thought relating to NFTs?
That's a good one. This is one I didn't quite think about. Controversial. Oh well. I don't.
Come on. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I think that. I'll turn out. I think the space needs to be, I think there's a lot. The platforms should definitely be trying to play well with each other more. I think you touched back on the conversation we had earlier where, you know, everyone's trying, you know, they're bringing in, you know, Web 2 thinking of like, oh, how do we like keep all of our users here? And like, yeah, it may work out, you know, they may succeed, but it's like they're hurting the space as a whole. And, you know, people can be burned, right? People can come into space, be burned on experience and think, oh, this is what NFTs are. And it's like, no, NFTs are so much more, right? Like they allow you to like have your own asset that can be used in any platform. And that should really be championed and promoted more. So I think there's a bit too much of, here it is. When we first launched, I was trying to promote as many platforms in the space as possible because I thought a rising tide raises all boats. And it felt very quickly that every platform, like a light switch, went from like promoting it to like, okay, now it's all hands for them, every man for himself, every person for themselves. And I think it's too soon to be doing that thinking. I think that as much money as there is in the space, it's still a drop in the bucket from what's to come. And it's too early to try to capture all of it. And so that's what I would encourage. My controversial thought is like, hey, we need to be playing more and working more together.
I love that. Okay, so is the reason were you saying before it was more collaborative and then it got less, or are you saying it was always a little bit like from the get-go it was a little bit confrontational or not more competitive?
I remember when Async art first launched, at that time it still felt very inclusive. Like I think all the platforms were pretty much playing nicely. And I think it's because there wasn't as much money in the space. But then real money started to pour in, and there's a scramble now for artists, collectors, platforms, everyone trying to grab as much of it as possible. And again, I'm not knocking anyone in particular. Like it's natural, right? And for the artists, right? Sometimes it's like first time making money, like okay, great, like you want to support certain collectors or platforms, hey, you're making real money, like try and capture it. But I think it's short-term thinking that if we try to do that, like yeah, maybe one or two platforms went out, and then it becomes like a Web 2 world where like you don't have this ecosystem. So I think we should all be promoting more. As a collector, I try to buy an artist's work wherever it manifests if I like the work. I'm platform agnostic, and I try not to like be exclusive to one. And then for collectors, I would encourage them to do the same. Collect on other platforms, see what they have to offer, because new things are coming out from all platforms all the time. That space is too early, really, to be like, okay, this is the way we should do it. It's like no, like every month there's new things coming out, and we need to support those when we can.
I love that. Okay, so do you think that, if there were incentives? Okay, so one example I like to use is NFTs on Ethereum are interoperable, and you can use them and implement them in different platforms or whatnot. But there's really no incentive for people to integrate other people's NFTs right now. So do you think if there was an incentive for people to work together, like these platforms, do you think that's the cure for this, or do you think that it's not really gonna be like that?
I think it's a mindset. I think it would be hard to have a really robust system that properly incentivizes people to do it. It just has to be the mindset. Like we're all here because Ethereum was, open source, and anyone could participate and build and be included. Like that's the only reason we're here. And like we should all remember like why we got into blockchain in the first place, right? Okay, some people came into it just for the money, and that's fine. But most of the builders in this space are here because of the promise of like, hey, this is a reimagine of the web, a reimagine of like ownership, and like, we should just remember that. That's what brought us here, and that's what will make this. It's the only way this Web3 system will beat out the old world. Because if we try to do that old world thinking, they've already perfected that. The Facebooks of the world, the Googles of the world, they perfected it, and we're not going to beat them on our own. We're going to beat them together if we do.
Love that. Love that so much. All right. If you could snap your fingers and instantly change or improve one thing in the NFT space, what would it be?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff. I'll just wrap some stuff. I think onboarding still needs to be fixed. Like blockchain is this thing where like if you take the steps to actually get onboarded and do the MetaMask and memorize your seed phrase and get it all written down and stuff, then you become a real believer. But like it's such a hard, and we all know this, like this has been happening for years, it's such a steep drop off. And we have solutions around it that we're working on, Magic Link and things like that, which are good. But onboarding still needs to be fixed. I really wish that was fixed in a real way. But it's hard. It's kind of like be your own bank, and then you find out like, well, no one wants to be their own bank because it's risky and you can lose your funds. And like, there's a reason why we have banks, so it's tough. Yeah, onboarding is the one thing I'd want to fix, if I could magically. Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Last question. Where do you see the world of NFTs in 3 years?
Oh man, at this rate, that's like. That it's like accelerated. That's like 30 years in like crypto time. But like would like to see okay. Well, here's what I would like to see. I don't know if it's gonna happen. I would like to see another social network emerge that's like our de facto tool for communicating. Like it's just kind of upsetting that like Twitter is still the main platform for all crypto and Reddit too, but Twitter mostly. And yeah, it's Web 2 world, right? Like and we can't, our NFTs don't play on Twitter. Like, can we get a social network where your NFT collections are naturally showing up there, or your profile image is an NFT in your wallet and has to be owned? Like, stuff like this. Someone should build that. Like that should be our platform that we use. But like, I would hope to see that in the next 3 years, a social network emerge. Physical displays, I think, will become more prominent. A lot more people are getting into the space. So Mural, recently got into it, right? Like, but the TV apps, they're gonna get into it. I'd love to see a low cost digital display. So something that like anyone could, like you could go to Walgreens or Walmart and buy a digital display that shows your NFTs. Like that I would really like to see. Will that happen in the next 3 years? I don't know about that, but like that's one of the things I would like to see happen in 3 years. In terms of what I think will happen, I think it's going to be, it just like the way the market ebbs and flows for the currencies, and every time it flows back out, some of the people who did the work of buying currencies, setting up a wallet, learning about the space, they're still here and they're building. So every wave that go that washes back out leaves a bigger community in the wake. And so that's what we're going to see over the next 3 years. It's going to ebb and flow.
Awesome. Awesome, Colin. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. I love getting to hear all about what you've been up to since last time we spoke. I mean, you're building this incredible platform, Async Art, and you're doing art, you're doing music, you're doing all sorts of media that can evolve over time, which is just incredible. I love just getting to talk to you about the trials and tribulations of being a founder and just everything. So, hats off to you. Thank you so much for doing this. If people wanted to find out more about yourself, find out more about Async, where should they go and what should they do?
So just async.art is the main website, and then of course Twitter, async art, and Instagram, async art. But yeah, say Twitter and the website's probably the best places to go.
Awesome. All right, Conan. Well, looking forward to our next chat.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
Hey, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes of the Zemared podcast and subscribe to the Zemared newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.